The question is, how will he come again?
He said he would come as a thief in the night, which means we won't know it.
Three different ways.
Right. It says, it also, another interesting thing is when he ascended, after he ascended into the cloud, an angel appeared to the apostles and told him, as you've seen Christ go into heaven, even so shall he descend out of heaven. Okay, now what was interesting about that, how many saw him go into heaven? Dozen or so. Just a very small number. So if it's going to be the same thing, that means when he comes again, only a very small number will recognize him when he comes again. So we use that correspondence. That's a lot different than every person in the whole world will see him at one time coming in the clouds of heaven, so to speak.
JJ, do you have any theories on how he might come back? Or if he has?
Okay, there's three steps to his coming. The first step is the raising of the Christ consciousness in individuals. And this started right after the war, the term the Christ consciousness began to kind of be planted as a seed thought in humanity. And it's kind of taken off until now everybody has heard the Christ consciousness taught by somebody. But back when the atomic bomb went off in 1945, not too many people had heard of that phrase, but it's permeating the consciousness of humanity. And many people are seeking the Christ consciousness. They have different ideas what it is. Some people are have some illusions around it, but at least they're seeking it. A lot of people are seeking the Christ consciousness. And to have the Christ consciousness materialize in fairly large numbers of humanity is the first step of the second coming. That's the first stage, so to speak. The second stage is the overshadowing of certain disciples. And the overshadowing is, that's actually how he came the last time, was through the overshadowing. When Jesus was baptized, it told us that the Son of God descended upon him and remained in him. And the Son of God was the Christ. A second entity came and dwelt with the disciple Jesus. This was prophesied by John. John was wondering, asking God in prayer one day, how am I going to recognize Christ when he shows up? And he received, a voice came to him, and the voice said these words to him, and it's recorded in the book of John. It says, when you see him upon whom the Spirit shall descend and then remain, you shall know that he is the Christ. So John went out and he baptized people, and the Spirit came down on them. They felt good, and then it left. And they baptized somebody else. The Spirit descended and then left. Descended and left. And then with Jesus, it was different. When Jesus came, he saw the Spirit descend like a dove, and it went into him. It just didn't rest on him, but it went into him, and it didn't leave. It stayed in him. And then he knew that he had baptized the Christ. Throughout Jesus' lifetime, he kept trying to explain this. People came to him and they said, well, how do you do these miracles? You got this great power. That's really great. He said, well, you misunderstood. It's not me that's doing these things. It's the one that dwells in me. He's the one that does these. He says, of myself, I can't do anything. It's the one that's in me. And the disciples were frustrated. And they said, Philip says to him, Jesus, you're not making any sense. He says, you talk about this Father that's in you, show us this Father. And Jesus says, well, look at me. If you see me, you'll see the Father, because he's in me. Oh, Philip says, I don't understand. Okay. And so the Jews came to him one time, and they said, well, the Scripture says that it takes the witness of two men to establish the truth. He says, you're only one. And Jesus said to him, no, I'm not one. He says, there's me, and then there's the one that is in me. That's two. And the Jews said, you're not making any sense. So Jesus spent a lot of time trying to tell people that there was two of them working together. And people just thought he was talking in symbols of some type. But he was talking literally. The Spirit who was the entity that was Christ, Melchizedek, came and entered into the body of the disciple Jesus, who is the reincarnation of Joshua that was with Moses. So we had Joshua who was with Moses and Melchizedek together in the same body at the same time. And that was called the overshadowing. Another word for it is divine possession. Divine possession is a little bit more intense than overshadowing. Overshadowing sometimes is where the master just kind of works from a distance, but divine possession is where the two disciples are actually in the body together at the same time. And this may, some type of overshadowing and divine possession would be the second step. And then the third step is if he came in the body all his own. We don't know if he will do that or just work by overshadowing this time round. He will definitely overshadow several disciples on the earth at different times and work with them. But it depends on the need, whether or not that will happen. And the overshadowing could have already occurred in a number of cases. But we won't have a record of that for some time to come as to how and when that took place. And overshadowing has to occur to create the molecule that I've written about. There has to be a link between heaven and earth to create the molecule, so that this is what Jesus did. He created a molecule of 12 men and 12 women, and the connecting link was the overshadowing of the Christ. And Christ is linked to spiritual molecules and orders on the other side of the veil. And he needed an anchor here upon the earth to create a molecule here. And when the molecule was created, it caused a tremendous spiritual flow to flow among the 12 apostles, so they were no longer human. Just like water is different than hydrogen and oxygen, but hydrogen and oxygen put together in a molecular order produces a substance entirely different than oxygen or hydrogen. And this is what Jesus did with the 12 apostles. He created a human molecule, and together, once the link was established, and the link was a hierarchical link, and again, the hierarchy comes into play. There has to be hierarchy involved. And the hierarchical link happened, and it caused a flow of the spiritual energy to go through all the apostles, so that they had abilities that went beyond human. They went out and they did tremendous miracles. They did miracles even when Jesus was there. He sent them out, and they did miracles. And the molecule, the 70, came back, which was another molecule formed, and he said, "Even the devils are subject to thy name." And they went out and did healings also. It was another molecule he created. And then when Judas betrayed him, what happened in the garden was the spiritual flow was interrupted. And the interruption of the spiritual flow is so profound, because it's like, well, if you're like underwater, for instance, you're a diver and you go so far underwater, the pressure is really great. You have to come up really slow or else it could kill you just about. And so what happened with Jesus is like he went underwater and was able to survive this great pressure from the spiritual energy that was surrounding him. But when Judas betrayed him, it was like all of a sudden he was lifted up to the surface and had all that pressure to deal with, and it just about killed him. And he was in the Garden of Gethsemane and praying, and it said that he was nigh unto death. And people read that, and it doesn't dawn on them why he was nigh unto death. Why would it be nigh unto death just because he was praying? He was nigh unto death because of the betrayal of Judas caused a retreat of all that spiritual energy at one time and caused him to almost die. And it took such an effect on him that he bled from the pores of his body. And at the last moment, and he had his apostles with him, Peter, James, and John, and he kept saying to him, he says, "Watch with me," he says, "while I go pray and commune with my Father." And they kept falling asleep. Three times they fell asleep, and he had them there because they could help diffuse that spiritual energy that was affecting them so profoundly. But they kept falling asleep, so they were almost useless. And he kept telling them, hey, stay awake, or you can help me out if you'll stay awake and absorb this energy. Three times they fell asleep, three times he woke them up. And people read them, they don't question, well, why did they fall asleep three times? That's kind of odd. You know, it wasn't that late at night. They didn't do anything that taxing. Why couldn't they stay awake when Jesus pleaded with them to stay awake? It's because they were also affected by the zapping of the spiritual energy or the removal of it. But they weren't as affected as Jesus because he was the center point. And then at the point where he was almost ready to die, it says an angel appeared and strengthened him. And that angel was a molecular link from the other side that poured spiritual energy back into him. It was like taking the deep sea diver that raised up too fast and then bringing him back down a little bit so he can live with that energy again. And so this molecular link he had from the other side appeared to him and strengthened him so he could survive. After that, the crucifixion didn't seem so bad after he went through what he went through at that time. Not only that, but DK says he dealt with the dweller on the threshold for the whole world itself, which and he said he was able to diffuse it somewhat, which was an accomplishment. But an individual dweller on the threshold is a horrendous thing to deal with, but to deal with a dweller on the threshold for the whole world is an amazing thing. Yeah.